Okay, now Sunila.
Okay. What I want to add, perhaps, to what Yayuri has said, is that this SCAP meeting is the first in the regional process of going to New York in June of 2000 with the review of the Beijing Platform for Action. And therefore, whatever we achieve in the process of this meeting is looked for by our colleagues, especially in Africa and Latin America, and will have an impact on what they are able to do in their own regional processes. And it's very important, therefore, to understand this process, at least according to my perception, as somehow trying to get onto the agenda some things that perhaps were not so critical to us in 1994 and 95 when we were talking about the Beijing Platform for Action, some things that became obvious to us in the 5 years since 1995 that, oh dear, we should have tried to do something better to get this particular area into the Platform for Action, and other things that that have been identified in the report of the Asia-Pacific Regional NGO Symposium as being the persistent issues that obviously nothing has been done about and issues on which our countries have great difficulty in moving forward. In terms of the Asia-Pacific region, I think it's important to also take into consideration the fact that in the 5 years since 1995, the Asia region in particular has gone through a huge process of both political and economic turmoil, which has had an impact both on the capacity of our states to implement the Beijing Platform for Action, but also on our own capacity as NGOs to intervene in ways that without economic and political turmoil might perhaps have been easier. And I think what I want to really urge us to look at as we go into the next 2 days is to try and understand the rationale for SCAP to, if you look at the agenda for the meeting, they have focused on the word empowerment, and the four sessions are going to be about economic empowerment, rights-based approach to empowerment, political empowerment, and strategies for empowerment. So obviously there is a reasoning at the level of SCAP and at the level of preparing for the meeting that I'm sure Thelma will be able to tell us more about, but in terms of our own positioning as women's NGOs who want very much to see that we can get our governments to commit themselves to something a bit beyond the Beijing Platform for Action during these 2 days, it seems important. Yayuri was trying to point out, there are some critical areas that have emerged in recent years and were the focus of a lot of discussion at the Asia-Pacific NGO Regional Symposium last month, including a wide range of concerns about women in work, about women and conflict and peace building, and about women and political participation that perhaps will get addressed in these sessions. And we need to really spend maybe today and the next days when we talk about our own lobbying strategies to see what are the concrete areas in which we want to really urge our governments to take steps that will guarantee protection of women's rights in these particular areas, because they're so vast and so difficult that otherwise I think it would be, just some rhetoric and nothing really concrete committed to at the end of the 2 days, which would be a real pity. In that sense, I think if you look at the political and economic crisis and add a picture of Asia not so much Pacific perhaps, but Asia in particular today, I think the whole issue of conflict in the region is certainly one of the most critical issues. And everybody who knows me knows that anyway I have a personal vested interest in talking a lot about women in armed conflict. But beyond that, I think the situation of conflict and the role of women within the conflict and the role of women in conflict resolution can perhaps be one of the areas in which we can try to arrive at some consensus. As Yayuri was saying, there are some things at the international level that we can perhaps try to urge governments to do. For example, commit to considering ratification of the International Criminal Court Statute or ratification of the optional protocol to CEDAW or the Landmines Treaty, which many of the South and Southeast Asian countries at least have not ratified at the present moment. But as everybody knows, it's always an issue of national political choices in doing these kinds of things, and therefore there is a limit to what one may lobby for in these matters. But in terms of certain other areas that we talked about at the Asia-Pacific Regional Symposium, for example, talking about ways in which the civil and political rights of women who are refugees or internally displaced people can be safeguarded, or the ways in which the reproductive rights of women who are displaced or are living as refugees can be protected. I think there is a space, because a lot of our governments are committed to providing some kind of assistance and support for internally displaced and refugee women, and because there are agencies like the UN High Commissioner for Refugees that also has a commitment to do these things. If we try to make sure that the document that comes out of the Asia-Pacific region and goes on to New York in June 2000 has a statement of concern about the rights of women who are caught up in armed conflict situations as civilians, as refugees, and as internally displaced persons, perhaps that could not only strike a resonant chord with sisters in Africa and Latin America as they go through their regional processes for Beijing Plus Five, but it may also eventually be a space in which we can continue with the lobbying effort in New York in June of 2000. Up to now, most of our states like to talk about the welfare of women who are caught up in armed conflict. So it's a very strategic and conceptual shift that we will be making to start talking about the rights of women who are caught up in conflict situations. But I think that internationally and within the region, this is perhaps a moment in which we can try to make this shift and see if we can really gain something beyond the Beijing Platform for Action's concerns about women in armed conflict situations. A second part of what I think we could reasonably try to achieve during this ESCAP meeting is a focus on women and nonviolent forms of conflict resolution. I think in all of our countries where there are violent conflicts, whether they are internal conflicts or civil wars or interstate conflicts, there is a growing understanding that a military solution is not going to be what works ultimately, and that all our societies have to work towards political negotiation and processes of conflict resolution that are nonviolent and that are based on the principles of respect and dignity for all peoples. And if one refers back to the Beijing Platform for Action, in fact, there's very little written at that time about, there's passing references to women's involvement in peace activities and in conflict resolution, but certainly nothing that gives us a very concrete handle on the conflict situations that we face today in the region. And given that earlier on this year there was an international conference on peace in The Hague, which went along with something called the Hague Appeal for Peace, which women and men here may be familiar with, but also given that in the year 2001 the United Nations is preparing to have a world conference against racism, again it seems that this is a politically viable moment in which we can put more forcefully onto the agenda, more forcefully than we did in 1995, our concern as women about non-violent and negotiated resolutions of conflicts, and our need and our concern about seeing more women as actors in and as decision makers and as active participants in the processes of conflict resolution. It's very interesting to observe, for example, the UN mission in East Timor and see how few women are there, actually, and how few women are on the list to be there. And recently I was talking to Thai friends who said that, in fact, there was a Thai woman proposed to go to East Timor, and that among her male colleagues there was a question, we'll have to spend a lot of time looking after her, so why doesn't, why do you want to send her? Because the males will have to spend a lot of time taking care of her. So it becomes really clear that even today, at the highest level, there is a continuing myth about women's inability to look after themselves and to play an active role in peace building. And perhaps I think that given the moment, given the political moment, and given the international concern about negotiating resolutions of conflict, this is perhaps a moment at this ESCAP meeting that we can try to be a bit more forceful about putting women in there in a real way. Not only looking at conflict, but looking at conflict resolution. There's a third concern that perhaps we need to take seriously as we go into these next 2 days, and that is this issue of political empowerment, which has been a very a key area in which a lot of advances have been made in the region in the years since 1995. Many of our states have made very active and concrete commitments to giving women a larger role in political participation. The representation of women has increased tremendously, and it's interesting that the impact of women's visibility in political institutions is not being matched by commitments to actually enable women to become decision makers. Recently, I have been talking to women in India, where over 1 million women have been members of panchayats now for 2 years, Pam? Yeah, and in Nepal, where women have been members of ward committees since last year. And the amount of violence and resistance that women have had to deal with as a part of being allowed to enter the political process is really very shocking. And the inability or unwillingness of the state to consider violence against women that has been particularly arising because of her choice to enter into the political arena is now creating a kind of a backlash in which all over, at least in South Asia, you're finding women saying, we do not want political representation, we do not want participation. Because honestly, I don't know, our Indian and Nepali friends here can perhaps share later on, women have been raped and killed. I mean, it's not only marginalization. In Nepal, the pet complaint was that we don't even get information about the ward committee meetings. We're just there in name, but we don't even get invitation to the meetings. But in both Nepal and Bangladesh and India, there have been really bad reports of a lot of extreme violence against women. And I think, again, in the discussion about political empowerment and political participation, unless the states are willing to take some very concrete steps to provide a space in which women may be politically active, the mere visibility and the mere altering of, creating quota systems or whatever it is that we have seen happen in South Asia is not going to enable women to become political actors in their own right. I'm going to stop there now, but I think we have a space for workshops, and maybe within the workshops there's more space to talk about these issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sunila. You listed and highlighted some very important points, including, first of all, what we achieve at this ASCAP meeting then will influence other regional meetings, which will be happen from now on and until the Commission on the Status of Women session next year.